Get your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. Got a lot to get into. Obviously, we're going to get you caught up on a couple of headlines, though. That's where we like to start. And the headlines begin with Dana White. He has secured a U.S. location for UFC fights. And just before you scratch your head, hear me out. UFC President Dana White so committed to resuming operations in this pandemic, he secured a private island to host events. He told ESPN on Monday he's just secured a location in the U.S. for UFC 249 on April 18th. And then that location will host weekly fights for at least the next 2 months. So how does he solve this problem? He solves this problem by going out and just saying, hey, I'm going to do what I want. I want to host it on my own island. Speaking of interesting innovation to figure things out, the NFL is working on the NFL draft. We've heard that it's going to be virtual. That's why we're taking your thoughts on it. But Baltimore Ravens coach John Harbaugh worried that sensitive team information is more vulnerable to getting stolen because of the technology NFL teams will rely on to connect players, to connect with players during the pandemic. So with them preparing to go viral, he's concerned about playbooks, meetings, all of these things coming into play. He's texted the Ravens IT members when he read about Zoom or other online resources getting hacked. So we're just at the beginning of the ever-sensitive NFL trying to figure out how to protect themselves and protect their information across the board in the NFL as we get ready for the draft. And the Bucks have new uniforms. We've been waiting to see what they would look like. They went out to their home. They went out to their social media to tweet out pictures. So now we suddenly have, no, it's not the creamsicle. I know you're excited, but it's not the creamsicle. They do say they're going back to their roots in 2020 with the new uniform. But instead, it is more of a paid, it's more paying homage to their Super Bowl years. So they're not wearing the creamsicle. Instead, it's a familiar look that you might remember from around the 97 or 2013 era. So a little bit of a throwback, but not the throwback so many of us were begging for. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. Remember, we're asking you, if you could bring one fantasy football experience into the NFL draft, given the fact that their draft, the real draft, is going to look so much like a fantasy draft, I want you to tell me what it would be. 888-729-3776. I'm being reminded that a lot of you drink, because so many of the challenges that we're being given, things you want to bring in, you're tweeting me at Jason Fitz. Most of them seem to involve shots or beer. So that's one thing. I will say I was in Mexico a few years on vacation, and the craziest thing that I saw there was a whole group of guys. So I go up to them and talk to them. Why are they there? Well, they were there because the loser every year has to organize an entire vacation for the winner. And wherever the winner picks, he has to organize it, put it all together. They go on a trip together. So, you know, maybe the team that gets the worst draft grade has to put together a trip for the winning team. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of innovative ideas. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer, changing the way you buy home insurance. Now you can go online, get a custom quote, save both time and money. Learn more at progressive.com. Major League Baseball also getting progressive in how they're looking at trying to bring back baseball. We told you about it earlier as Jeff Passan reported this morning with Scott Van Pelt on SportsCenter that there is a plan for Major League Baseball they're trying to look at that could bring games back in May by moving all of the games to Arizona in stadiums that are empty. So we want to get some thoughts on it by moving it a little bit forward. We're joined now by the Athletic senior baseball writer Keith Law. His book, The Inside Game, Bad Call, Strange Moves, and What Baseball Behavior Teaches Us About Ourselves, comes out on April 21st. First and foremost, Keith, you've got a captive audience for the book. Everybody has to sit at home right now, so perfect timing. Congratulations on that. I want to get your thoughts on what we've heard about Major League Baseball in May coming back. What was your initial reaction to baseball being aggressive with this plan?
Well, two things. One, that's not going to happen. Two, that what was leaked to the press, the Associated Press also had a bit of this story, was merely one idea that has been kicked around in Major League Baseball as they're trying to come up with ways to play a partial season. No one is playing any actual games anywhere in May. The people who think that are delusional. They are simply ignoring all of the scientific evidence we have so far and the best models that we have. There's no way there's going to be any kind of public gatherings. Even if Major League Baseball wanted to push it, the union has to agree to it. Of course they're not going to agree to it. They're not going to agree to have 40 or 50 people gathering together in clubhouses every day. That is exactly the opposite of what we should be doing, because we're not going to be over this pandemic by the time we get to mid-May or so. I think we'll be lucky if we have any games at all, with or without fans, before July. But it's definitely not happening in May.
So, Keith, when reports like this come out, I mean, what's the effect on the general popular psyche of everybody trying to figure out the good, the bad, the real, the false, and where we live?
I don't know that it affects anybody other than just sort of driving some traffic. Like, obviously, people are going to click on stories like this. This is a pretty outrageous story, right? It's getting a lot of attention because it's so absurd, because I think people are viewing it two ways. You've got people who sort of acknowledge the reality of the situation, those of us who are just trying to follow what the actual experts say and recognize the idea of playing games in May is a pipe dream. There are also plenty of people out there who are in denial, you know, coronavirus truthers essentially, who are saying, yeah, open the economy back up, get everybody back out there, without fully acknowledging it's going to result in a lot of hospitalizations and deaths. And that's what would happen if we tried to even play games without fans, I think, regardless of the sport. People who push this probably don't quite understand just how many people are involved simply to make a game happen. Before you let a single fan in the stadium, that's a lot of people together in fairly enclosed spaces and clubhouses, not just the players, coaches, clubhouse staff, some stadium operations personnel. Somebody's got to be there to turn the lights on. All of those people would then be put at risk for this. And I think you've got to be in pretty deep denial to think that there's any chance of that happening in 6 or 7 weeks from now.
We're talking to The Athletic senior baseball writer Keith Law. Let's first take your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. Okay, give me a little understanding here, because we talk so much about the NFL and the Players Association and their collective bargaining power, but the fact that there's sort of the haves and the have-nots, and that affects how they make their decisions. So you mentioned earlier the Major League Baseball Players Association not likely to go for this. Where's the split for them in guys that want to get back to work or need to get back to work versus guys that are going to be cautious?
All Major League Baseball players have a financial incentive to play, right? Regardless of what their financial situation is, no one's getting paid. They're getting service time, which was a huge, huge victory for the union. They're getting service time even if the entire season is canceled, which, by the way, I still think is a possibility. I personally hope it's not, it doesn't come to pass. But if I'm a realist, I think there's a decent chance we see no games this year. All Major League players will get service time, which means we'll have free agency next winter and players will be pushed forward in the arbitration process. But nobody's getting paid, as far as we can tell, or they're getting paid a pittance relative to their actual salaries, unless we see some games. There are also players who are in the union who are not currently major leaguers who would very much benefit from seeing us play financially, because it's the difference between them getting service time, not getting service time, and them getting a major league salary versus getting a minor league salary or getting nothing. So there are probably voices within the union who are more keen to see games happen. But from my understanding, from brief conversations with people on the labor side, is that they're more concerned with just player safety. They're not going to agree to any plan that potentially puts players at risk or forces that puts them in an uncomfortable position of having to essentially say, no, I don't think it's safe. You don't want to put games out there and tell the players, well, you just show up if you want to. That's an untenable position. And I think that the union, again, based on what I know from their side, I think they would also oppose that.
So, Keith, how do owners balance sort of the teeter-totter of pressure from network partners and sponsors and really owners as a general group wanting to play games versus the pushback of making sure that the players, who are ultimately the ones affected, can stay safe?
I'll be honest. I have not heard anything from the league office that says that they're being, you know, at all cavalier about this, that they are very much aware, the commissioner's office, I mean, they're very much aware that any plan – one, any plan right now has to be fluid, right? You can't – this came up in the possibility of moving the Major League Baseball draft back from June 10th. Same thing. They can make a plan, but we won't really know until we get much closer whether they can execute that plan, because we have to see what the public health situation is and what various government authorities are saying. I live in Delaware right now. They just said all hotels and other short-term rentals must close. You can't have players traveling for any reason if there's no accommodations for them. So they're going to be subject to a lot of local rulings and regulations that could screw up a plan. Major League Baseball could come up with what they think is a great plan and not be able to do it because of outside forces. But again, I'm not hearing that they're rushing to get back, that they're trying to be cavalier. They recognize there's a balance. They want to play games because their broadcasting partners want them to play games, and that's the only way that Major League Baseball is going to see significant revenue this year. At the same time, everyone I've talked to on the Major League Baseball side is very aware there's a huge public risk, public health risk here if they put games together too soon, with or without fans, and they're very much trying to balance those two factors. They're I don't want to see Major League Baseball painted as unaware of the public health risks, because they are, and they're trying to do the right thing for all parties involved.
All right, Keith, so give me your – you've given us sort of the possibility, and I agree with you, that there's a possibility that Major League Baseball may not even see a game this year. So give me your realistic best-case scenario for baseball this year.
I think realistic best-case scenario is games without fans July 1st-ish. Yeah, give me a little leeway on that in either direction, but that's probably about what we see. There's maybe some slight chance we see fans in stadiums at the end of the year, maybe for the playoffs, but realistically, probably not. I think public health authorities would be opposed to that. Short of a vaccine or much better evidence that people who've already been exposed to COVID-19 then have some kind of lasting immunity and an inability to transmit it, which I don't think is that likely. My guess is that government authorities would say you can have the games, you can broadcast the games, but you can't have public gatherings having thousands and thousands of people, because they know we've seen outbreak. There were three outbreaks in Kansas this week that were all tied to churches. A lot more people in a Major League Baseball stadium for a playoff game than there would be in a single church. And public health authorities will want to avoid that at all costs.
You can follow him on Twitter at Keith Law. That's the best way to get there. His book, The Inside Game, Bad Calls, Strange Moves, and What Baseball Behavior Teaches Us About Ourselves, comes out April 21st. Congrats on the book release. Go get it wherever you get your books, guys. And Keith, we really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on with us.
My pleasure.
And look, I'm here to be a beacon of light. That's what I try to do. I try to entertain and distract and give us all an opportunity to escape together. Let's agree that if I'm going to be that, and we're all going to have this moment where we don't have to think about it, the only thing that I ask on the flip side of it is that we can be real when we get real information. So that's what we're going to try and do when we have guys like Keith that come on and can give us real insight on what's really going on and what it means. I'm going to take that all day, every day, even if it's unfortunate for all of us in our fandom. At least it's real information we can take, we can unpack, and you can do with it from there what you please. First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. Now, every day, we've been taking a different look at a quarterback as part of the First Take series, QB Continued. Today's QB Continued focused on the Minnesota Vikings and one of the more polarizing quarterbacks in the entire NFL. Dalvin Cook came on with the guys to talk about the Kirk Cousins offense, the Vikings offense, and really what the Vikings look like right now.
Yeah, we talk about Kirk. So, you know, it's always growth with anybody, you know, going year from year. You know, you see the growth, and it's going to be, you know, our third offensive coordinator. And it's all about being in the right system. And I think, you know, bringing back Coach Kubiak is good for Kirk and good for all of us, you know, because we love what Coach Kubiak brings to the table. And, you know, I think he's comfortable in that offense and he can make plays.
Dalvin, listen, when you look at the Minnesota Vikings offense, I mean, obviously with you, things are a game changer. It's certainly a different offense when you're on the field for the Minnesota Vikings, no question about it. But last time I checked, Thielen can play. Kyle Rudolph can play. Kirk Cousins is not a scrub. And so when you take that into consideration and you consider the kind of receiver that Stephon Diggs is, what are we to make of the fact that Stephon Diggs, at least last year, publicly was unapologetic about the fact that he wanted to be gone, and he's now gone and a member of the Buffalo Bills? What are we to think about the Minnesota Vikings, considering the weapons you have on offense and the fact that this guy didn't mind leaving?
Yeah, no, dude, that's my brother. And, you know, we spent so much time together since I got to Minnesota. And, you know, Diggs is just a player that he works so hard, and he wants the football, and he wants to make plays. And you got to accept that as a teammate and as a player. So, no, we still going to be contenders. We're going to work our tails off. And our ultimate goal is to hold the trophy up at the end of the day. And, you know, we're going to work towards that. So, you know, look for the Vikings to still be contenders.
Dalvin, to my way of thinking, you guys are live as anyone if you're on the field. And if you're not on the field, I don't believe in that team. Sorry. I don't think they can overcome your absence. How do you stay on that field?
Just keep growing. Last year, I missed two games. And, you know, every year, it's to finish the season with 16, 17 games. You know, if we have more games. But just to finish the season fully through, healthy. And, you know, each year, I'm learning a tweak in my game to get myself ready to go each and every week and, you know, to be on the field for my team.
Dalvin, I know you've been working, trying to get ready for this offseason, hoping to get the 2,000 yards, but you've also been thinking about everybody that's suffering from this pandemic. Can you tell everyone what you've been doing, the specific donation that you gave?
Yeah, we are getting mad checks from the NFLPA, and I think it's about like roughly like $18,000 to $20,000, and donated it to a hospital in Minnesota. And you know, it's all about for the cause. You know, like I said, the world's going through a traumatic change, and you know, I wanted to use my platform to you know, help lives and change lives. And I think donating that money will help some people, you know, change their lives and get better.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz, and what we like to do every day when we do QB Continued is take it a step forward by getting a little expertise. We're going to do that now. We're joined by ESPN Vikings reporter Courtney Cronin. I'll admit my bias. I think Courtney's one of the best we have here. So, Courtney, I'm really glad you're with us. I hope you're staying safe. Thanks for the time. Give me your realistic – I mean, people are so polarized at this point on all things Kirk Cousins. Where is Kirk Cousins in the trajectory of quarterbacks in your mind in the NFL?
Well, I think that the time that he's been in Minnesota, I mean, you can look at the last 2 years and see notable improvement from where he was at in 2018 when he has two different offensive coordinators and they're in a heavy drop back passing game system early on. And then John DeFilippo gets fired and they switch their philosophy to the polar opposite, which is they want to be a run heavy team. And that's Mike Zimmer's philosophy. I think that the time that Kirk has had, obviously last year with Kevin Stefanski and now continuing to run that same system with Gary Kubiak, will only help him further, staying comfortable in the system. He had good weapons to work with, a great running game bolstered by Dalvin Cook. But as I was just writing in a piece for ESPN.com, the offensive line remains the biggest need for this team. And all the moves that they make, extending Cousins on a two-year deal a few weeks ago, anything they do in the draft, all of that's going to be for naught if they don't address the offensive line. And Mike Zimmer said as much at the combine a few weeks ago that, you know, in order to make the offense successful, they got to give Kirk time to be back there, you know, give him time to throw the ball. I mean, that is what you get with Kirk Cousins. Now, you know, I know we talk about it in like the bigger picture of the league. Is he a top 15 quarterback? Is he top 20? I certainly think he's in the top 15 without question. But you know, as we're seeing the league morph into a system where you have more mobile quarterbacks, guys who aren't, for lack of a better term, statues back there. I don't think that's ever going to be what Kirk Cousins is, and he realizes that, which is why, in the grand scheme of things, when you look at this team and the weaknesses, the biggest one hasn't been addressed, and that's going to directly affect the success of Kirk Cousins in 2020.
So, Courtney, when you say things like they've gone to a run-based offense and they need offensive line help, I think that's where people start to come in and say, well, that's because Kirk Cousins is a liability. So when you talk about, you know, Zimmer's approach for run first, is that because of some perceived lack of ability by Kirk Cousins, or is that just his preferred offensive approach?
I honestly think it's a little bit of both, but most certainly Zimmer's old school. He wants to win games on defense. If games could be won 9-3, he'd probably be all for it. And I think with the risk factor you have there, like go back to the Case Keenum years the Case Keenum year in 2017. There were times where I think that Mike Zimmer his heart might have skipped a beat on the sideline just because of some of the errant throws that Case made, and Thielen and Diggs made him look really good because they were both excellent in terms of contested catches that year. But he wants more conservative play at quarterback. I mean, that's part of the reason that the Vikings decided to forego their options that they had in 2017 and go after Kirk Cousins, because in seeing all that film over so many years in Washington, they knew what they were going to get in him. I mean, you can't say that, you know, a quarterback that had been a starter for so many years at that point, that you would expect a zebra essentially to change his stripes. Now, you can bolster the success that he has by putting pieces around him and putting him in a scheme that's going to take pressure off of him, which is what I think this run first offense does. So I guess in that sense, it's probably, you know, in terms of, you know, using the word liability with Kirk Cousins, I think that's why the offense seems to work so much. But we also know that Gary Kubiak has taken no-name quarterbacks before and made them look pretty darn good, which is why Mike Zimmer is such a big fan of the scheme itself, because it relies heavily on play action. I mean, you can't boot your way to a Super Bowl, or at least, you know, most teams can, unless you're the San Francisco 49ers. But they're in a situation now where, you know, we're trying to figure out where the ceiling is for this team. It might be where it's been since Cousins arrived in 2018. But they believe that given their experience with Cousins the last 2 years, where he's at in the offensive system and what this offense actually is, that there might even be a next step to his game.
All right, Courtney, real quick, before we let you go, where do you see the Vikings finishing this year with no Stephon Diggs? Where do they rank in the division to you?
Well, if they don't address the offensive line, like I mentioned, it's going to be tough for them. I mean, obviously, the Bears have made some upgrades. I think that that's huge, bringing in Nick Foles and seeing kind of what they do from there. But I think this team is, you know, without Stephon Diggs, they've got to find a number two receiver, and they've got to do it quickly with a high draft pick. I right now, I'd say they're probably a 9-7 team, but depending upon what they do in the draft and what other teams in the division do in the draft, I think they're probably a second or third place finisher there at 9-7 in the NFC North.
Follow her on Twitter at Courtney R. Cronin. Courtney, as always, we appreciate your expertise. Stay safe. Thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks so much. Take care.
This is going to be one of the most interesting things, because Kirk and the Vikings are locked in together. That's not going anywhere. So knowing that, it's going to be interesting to see how Vikings fans eventually come to grips with that. That's one of the more interesting storylines going into the NFL this coming offseason. We'll keep breaking it down. But next up, UFC 249 on a private island. It's actually not that far-fetched if you're Dana White. So we're going to talk to, I think, the best expert we have in all of the UFC. We'll get his thoughts on it, and that's coming up next. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. Now, one of the headlines we've told you today might be one of the coolest headlines that possibly we've ever had. What is it? It's the UFC. Dana White. He's going to make UFC 249 go on April 18th. Now, before you react to that, let me explain how. He told ESPN on Monday he's secured a location in the U.S. That location is a private island. That's right. He went out and got himself a private island. Like, if you've ever known any rich people in your life, like, there's certain magazines that go out where you can buy yachts and private islands and all these things. I've only seen the magazine. But you look at these things, you can go out and just buy an island. Dana White apparently is willing to do that. So he's willing to buy an island and not only put this UFC event on, but also look for future UFC events to happen over the next fights every week for the next several months. The question is, do Max and Stephen A. like the concept that Dana White's come up with?
I like it a lot. I think that boxing promoters and organizers of golf events and any athletic competition that involves relatively few participants and can be done by acquiring a relatively small number of tests, I think those organizers should look into it and very much look into what Dana here is doing.
Max Kellerman, I don't disagree with anything that you're saying. Both you and I have known Dana White for a very, very long time. We're both incredibly fond of him. I love the guy, and I love what he's doing. I don't disagree with anything. But as a friend, what I would caution him to do is to pay attention to things from an optics perspective, Max. And guess why I would say that? Dare I say, Max, it would be because of people like yourself and others. Not about Dana White per se as it pertains to UFC 249 and beyond, but just the optics overall because of the times that we're living in. Dana White spoke at the Republican National Convention. He has been on the record saying he would never say a negative word about the president. He is obviously a staunch supporter of the president, and there are an abundance of people, including yourself privately, publicly, and otherwise, who have been critical of the president in terms of the verbiage coming out of his mouth at this particular moment in time. So when you're gung-ho about going and being steadfast in your approach to make sure that there's a UFC 249 event and you're dogged about it, if you give the impression at all that you're ignoring, and keep in mind, neither yourself nor I are even suggesting that Dana White and the UFC is doing such a thing, because we know he's not, by virtue of the details that evolve around what he's doing to put this event together. We know he's not ignoring it. We know he's not being tone deaf. We know he's paying attention to it, but he also understands that at some point in time, we're going to have to move forward. In the end, though, because of critics out there who will take his association with a president that they have unapologetically vilified, particularly during this coronavirus situation where we've seen the president go up there and speak on issues, some people at least have challenged whether or not he should be speaking at all about those issues. The bottom line is, you never know how that gets attached to Dana White as he's trying to put this event together, and he's being accused of being tone deaf. So I would say to him, be careful about that. Move forward. Do what you're doing, but monitor the terrain optically so you make sure that you're saying and disseminating the right kind of message as you move forward. That's the only thing that I'm saying. I'm not saying anything else, and I'm certainly, Max, not disagreeing with anything that you outlined, because you're right. I totally agree with you about what he's doing here.
Let's first take your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz, and let's get some Straight Talk on this, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Whenever I have a UFC topic on the board and I know I want expertise, I go to one person. That's our ESPN MMA analyst, Ariel Helwani, joining us now. Ariel, thanks for some time. I hope you're staying safe, my friend. What was your reaction to the report that Dana White's looking at a private island to hold these events?
Well, Jason, thank you for having me on. I hope you're doing well as well. So I have mixed emotions. There's kind of two stories happening right now in the world of the Ultimate Fighting Championship, because they have an event happening on April 18th, and that event was originally supposed to happen in Brooklyn. It was supposed to be headlined by Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson, and of course everything happened and Khabib is now stuck in Russia, and so they have been working on finalizing a location on the west coast of the United States, likely California, where they will turn that location into sort of a makeshift UFC headquarters, and they will hold a number of events, April 18th, April 25th, May 2nd, May 9th, at this location for American-based fighters, so that they can keep the train rolling along, and they're ensuring everyone that, you know, everything will be safe and healthy and all that stuff. Yesterday, he also comes out with that, like, he confirmed that. We reported that on Sunday, but he comes out with the island story as well. Now, that's the first time that I heard about the island. I've talked to a number of people since that came out. None of them were told about the island. Worth noting that none of them have been told where this April 18th event will happen. But Dana has been hell-bent on putting on this event. He's been very confident that the event on April 18th and the subsequent events will happen. But the idea of essentially renting out or buying an island and then flying people in from all over seems incredibly ambitious. He wants to do it for various reasons. He's not very clear as to why he is so hell-bent on doing this. But I just want to say, I've not heard from anyone who has told me that they have contacted about this. So basically what I'm trying to say is, the stuff on April 18th is a lot more likely to happen as of right now than the island stuff, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're talking to ESPN MMA analyst Ariel Helwani. So when you look, I mean, when you start thinking about the April 18th event particularly, is there opportunity for UFC in your mind to get to a bigger, broader audience because simply there's no other sport going on right now?
Honestly, I don't buy that theory. Number one, it's going to be on pay-per-view, so you're asking people to pay for the event. Number two, it's a good card. I mean, Tony Ferguson is a good fighter. Justin Gaethje is a good fighter. But it's not, you know, the blockbuster card to end all blockbusters. I mean, there's a theory that perhaps you put this on free television, you get a lot more people watching it, and that's how you expose it. Also, yesterday, a big concert was announced happening on the same night, featuring Lady Gaga and Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder, etc. So there is going to be some kind of entertainment for the general public on that night, of all nights. So I don't know. I mean, I know some people in the MMA world are saying, like, oh, this is going to be great. The whole world's going to be watching us. But I still feel like people are going to find, if you're an MMA fan, you'll watch it. If you're not, you're not. And certainly a tough way to introduce the sport to a new fan base is to put it behind a paywall, right? Like, if this was free on some broadcast television network, that's a whole different story. But we're talking about, you know, $65 pay-per-view for
what is a good card, but not like an A++++ card. And so I think it will do what it would have done had this not been going on, just, you know, the normal numbers, so to speak.
Ariel, I had the opportunity to watch WrestleMania over the weekend, which was done in front of nobody, and there's some mixed reviews on it. Some people loved it. I thought it was haunting and almost disturbing and a reminder of where we are right now as a world. So what takeaways can UFC and Dana White take from WrestleMania and the way that was broadcast?
Yeah, you know, I had the same mixed emotions because I was watching it with my kids, and, you know, I've never shown my kids WrestleMania before, and I kind of felt guilty showing it to them like this, because this is not WrestleMania, right? WrestleMania is in front of 80,000 people. There's glitz and glamour and all kinds of stuff, and this was kind of depressing at times. The best matches were the ones that were, you know, very much produced and outside of the performance center. Unfortunately, the UFC doesn't have that luxury, but I would also suggest that the UFC doesn't need the crowd as much as a WrestleMania, because first things first, there are a lot of fights that happen, especially in Las Vegas. The early fights are in front of no one. Like, when I went to see Mayweather McGregor, up until the co-main event, there was probably 1,000 people inside T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. So it's not uncommon for fights to happen in front of very little people. If you shoot it the right way, and if you, you know, you darken the crowd and the seats, it's not that big of a deal. They had an event in March in Brazil when this all started in front of an empty arena, and by the end, I totally forgot that no one was there. And they've had a reality show for over a decade called The Ultimate Fighter, and all of those events, has been 26 or so seasons, in front of no people in an empty warehouse. So it's not really that weird compared to WWE, which I think needs the crowd a lot more. So I think it'll be fine as far as that is concerned. But you're opening yourself up to so much criticism, so many questions about, you know, the health and safety of the athletes, the aftermath, asking them to train for these fights. Very, very complex. And, you know, again, Dana wants to be the first one. I think there's a little ego involved there, a little money involved as well. And we'll see, you know, so much could change also in a week and a half, right? So we'll see if they actually are able to get this done.
We're talking to ESPN MMA analyst Ariel Helwani. It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. One other question for you, Ariel, that I've been asking everybody with sports that are looking at coming back. I'm a little confused in a world where, you know, Patrick McEnroe joined us last week talking about his battle with COVID and that it took, you know, 10 days for him to get a test back. And we also know that you can test negative for this, even if you have it in your body, if you don't have enough of the viral load. So as much as they want to talk about testing athletes and even quick testing athletes, how can they really assure the fighters that everybody is safe?
They can't. And by the way, I have not been given any kind of confirmation. When Dana talks about this, he's very vague. Like, are the fighters being tested beforehand? To the best of my knowledge, no. They're saying that they'll be tested if they show symptoms. Like, do we have access to these tests? What if you're a fighter who gets banged up in this fight? You hyperextend your arm, and under normal circumstances, you'll be going to the hospital. But in this case, do you want to go to the hospital? Is that smart? And what if you really have to go to the hospital? Now you have to be there, and you're taking resources away from someone who is truly struggling. Like, in some respects, this was self-inflicted, right? You chose to go into a fight knowing that you can get injured. So there's so much there that, honestly, when I think about it, you know, my head spins, because on the one hand, like, everything around us, everything that we're reading and seeing and hearing suggests that this shouldn't happen. It's a contact sport. It goes against everything that everyone is telling us to do right now, which is stay at home and not be in contact with other people. And then on the other hand, I've talked to countless fighters at this point who not only are telling me, where do I sign up? How do I get there? I need this. I need the money. I need to fight. You have to remember, MMA fighters don't make a lot of money. They only get paid, for the most part, unless you're like the top 1% with a ton of sponsors, if you fight. You know, when you talk about, you know, the people who are losing out on all this, who are related to sports, you know, people who work at arenas and work for teams, you know, the athletes for these major leagues, you know, NBA, NFL, et cetera, they get paid regardless, but it's the workers around who are losing out. Well, I put MMA fighters in that same category. They don't get paid a lot to begin with. Some of them make 10 and 10, you know, in the UFC, 10,000 to show and 10,000 to win. That's nothing. You're walking away with 20,000 before you have to pay all your expenses. They all want this. So part of me, like, wants the fighters to succeed and make money and thrive as well as the rest of the world. But then the other part of my body is saying, like, this is just wrong. This shouldn't happen. So I'm truly conflicted. Like, I can't give a straight answer on this because I just don't know if there is one.
Well, that's why you should follow him on Twitter at Ariel Helwani, because he'll always be honest. He'll always break it down, and it'll always be great. Ariel, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us. Stay safe, my friend.
Same to you, my man. Thank you.
That's some Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. And again, we're never going to be Debbie Downer on this show with everything, but we're always going to be realist. We'll try and be as positive as we can, but we have to be realist about that. And that's what I love about what Ariel just did. Coming up, we want your take on how the NFL can improve their virtual draft. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Plus, I've got some real concerns on how it's all going to go down. We'll tell you about it next. First, take your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. If you missed the whole second hour of today's show, any of it, go check it out on demand in the First Take Your Take podcast, brought to you by Capital One. With Capital One, you can open a new checkings or savings account with no fees or minimums. Welcome to banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Approval required. Capital One, N.A., member FDIC. I'll encourage you, if you're a baseball fan, if you're a sports fan in general, I rarely tell you, hey, you really should go back and listen to the podcast, because you're also already listening to me now. That's not lost on me. Go back and listen to the beginning of hour two. Keith Law of The Athletic joined us and broke down some of the reports you're hearing on Major League Baseball to give another realistic sort of view of what could be, what might be, and what might not be. It's important for context, because the context of the conversations we're having take a lot. It takes a lot. It takes good. It takes bad. It takes analytical. It takes dreaming. It takes creative thinking, but it also takes logic. And Keith Law did a great job of breaking down the other side of many of the reports you're hearing right now. So I would encourage you to go listen to it. In addition, I'd encourage you to think more about the NFL draft, because it's not going to be as simple as we think it is. It's a virtual draft. That's why we asked you if you could bring one fantasy football experience into the NFL draft. What would it be? Why? Because the NFL draft is actually going to look much like your fantasy drafts have looked in the past. Patrick says, have the draft at Buffalo Wild Wings. A funny idea. If we weren't in the situation we were in, at least to have somebody send the food all the way across. Now, Jay-Z says, there's a way to communicate privately with all 31 teams at the same time. Have each club set up private email for draft day trades. That's a reminder of how complicated this will all be as we continue to look at what it is. But we've had several come in and say, what about auctions? Jason says, auction it up. $10 fake money bid on one quarterback, running back, wide receiver, 25-cent increments. We've had a few other people come in and say, make key positions cost different amounts of money. Ivor, who called in earlier, suggested that we do trades before draft day. But then Harold says, auction style. The amount of money you can spend is based on your draft position. Higher draft picks get more money. I also like the whoever owns the team who finishes in last place has to get a tattoo of the first place owner's choosing. All of this fun is because I have to remind you, as much as we're going to get the draft, this is going to be different. Think about it. Everybody's in different rooms. Your coach, your owner, your GM, your scouts, your assistant coaches. And they're all trying to communicate at the same time on limited lines of communication, whatever it looks like. While multiple teams are trying to call in and make trades, nothing about this draft is going to be normal. This is the time where you better look at your team and ask yourself, do I love my scouts? Do I love my front office? And do I love my team's ability to be organized in chaos? Because that's what this is truly going to be about. And it will shape the next 5 years of the NFL. Coming up, Will Cain. He'll discuss MLB, UFC, and events everywhere. That's coming up next. First, take your take.